Good afternoon, friends. Welcome to the TBC Network. Welcome to your lunchtime doctor, your favorite doctor, Dr. Sophia Mohammed, for today, Monday. Good afternoon, Doc.
Good afternoon, Bass. Good afternoon to all those tuned in to your lunchtime doctor. This is the program where we dissect those medical challenges. We go deeper into getting that understanding, the trigger causes, and of course, how we can help resolve the situation. We also encourage you to share what's on your lunchtime plate and what health habits you have been learning and sharing with your community. I'm your co-host, Dr. Sophia Mohammed, for the next hour here to answer your questions.
All right, folks, of course, our numbers are 6273-225-2257, and for your WhatsApp messages, 306-1065. Of course, we're being heard on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105 FM.
So today, we are going to touch a little bit on preparation for our students as they enter the school term in September. We want to make sure all the parents and caregivers who are tuned in, did you get their eyes checked? Are you having any concerns in getting them prepared? We do know we just went through a nice six weeks so far, two more weeks before the end of the July-August vacation. And that return to September also mean it may be new students transitioning from primary school to secondary school. My son is one of them, so believe me, I know those anxieties that parents may be experiencing. We're going to dissect all of that and chat with all of the parents who are tuned in today. In our Health Plus tomorrow, that's some of our key topics, looking specifically at children's eye care safety. Back over to you to see if we have any questions.
Yeah, sure. Let's get some calls coming in there. First caller, hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to the panel. What do you want to find from me, doctor? If you have a tooth that broke and you refuse to take out the piece in the gum and flesh cover it, if it have any side effects at all. Thank you.
Great question. Now, as you would know, that is definitely oral cavity, dental, and I'm the medical doctor, but I can certainly share from some of the experiences of my patients. And of course, that understanding of what happens if there's that broken tooth within the structure of the gum. If it is a dental and oral care hygiene, an oral care healthcare professional, a dental surgeon has shared that certain parts of the tooth need to remain within the gum structure, then it may be because of there being some sort of compromise to the nerves around that supports that particular tooth. It may also be that extracting that tooth could either lead to further disintegration, or it may be a further step in terms of dental surgery. So I'm not familiar with the x-ray and exactly which tooth it is, because different tooth based on the space they occupy within the oral cavity can cause different disruption. So let's just say it's a wisdom tooth and it's impacted badly. That certainly needs to be extracted. But if it's a canine, that may not need to be extracted because of its position. So again, I would lean into the advice of the dentist, your oral surgeon. If your particular dentist didn't give you that information in a way that you felt you're comfortable with, I'll highly suggest to get a second opinion. But end note, if there is continuous pain, if there's discomfort, then please see any healthcare professional, because it could be the nerve is involved and those nerves connect to the facial nerves. And we have had patients present us that an impacted tooth led to an infected area of the gum, causing a gingivitis, and then that affected the nerve. So again, base your decision on what's in front of you and the advice you got from your dental specialist. Hope that answers the question.
Thank you, Doc. Let's take another call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome.
Beast boy. Time to waste. Doc, what's up? So, Doc, listen carefully. I am a person to be on YouTube, so it's just water has benefits and things, right? Last week, Wednesday, I walked amongst other things. With the cucumin in turmeric is damaging the liver. They do a lot of studies, and people die from things like this. What? Yesterday, now I come back on these trips, what's with it again? And they say this turmeric is very good against cancer. That's two. And the last thing, Doc, what's the best food or fruit to build insulin? I don't know if you could build it or what, but I'm really concerned about my insulin level. I am not diabetic. I would like to know, we would like to know the best thing to build insulin, if it's possible. Thanks a lot, Doc. God bless.
Thank you so much. I always look forward to when you call and your questions. I love having our callers and listeners being so well researched. Now let's talk a little bit about that turmeric. Again, everything in moderation, because you're quite correct, and we did mention this when we had the conversation on turmeric, that in high amounts, high doses, or continuous long-term use, it can cause nausea and diarrhea. And guess what? That's pretty much with any nutrient, multivitamin, food. Anything in excess will cause some destruction to the body. Particularly now, turmeric, it in excessive amounts, and I'm actually reading from a medical journal here, and this was published November 2021, and they said in excessive amounts, it can lead to nausea and diarrhea. And it's advised that if you're using turmeric on a continuous basis, that you seek the guidance of a healthcare professional. But if we're using it, say, to add to our tea, that's a small amount of shavings, or even possibly just a couple sprays of powder, turmeric powder. If we're using it to cook, then again, that's just a small amount. So it's not in excess. So I pretty much think it's all based on the amount you're using. However, the health benefits, like all things, sometimes your benefits outweigh your risk, and that's why you can continue using it. I want to draw the example to aspirin. Aspirin is a medication we prescribe for all our patients with cardiovascular instability, meaning if there's a clot, if there's thrombosis, if there's the possibility of a heart attack, a stroke, all of our patients with high blood pressure and high cholesterol, they are prescribed aspirin. But guess what? Too much of aspirin can also have the side effect of leading to peptic ulceration or scarring of the lining of the esophagus. And that's why we utilize the enteric-coated aspirin. So you'd see a doctor prescribe something called ECASA, enteric-coated aspirin. ASA is the acronym for aspirin. And you'll also, if you are on continuous use of aspirin, you will see your healthcare professional prescribe a proton pump inhibitor like omeprazole, pantoprazole, and that is to protect the stomach lining. So even medications, we may prescribe anything in overuse or continuous chronic use can have damaging effects, especially on the liver, because the liver is the metabolism unit or the detox unit of the body. It's where everything comes together to be broken down. So if there's too much turmeric in the system, then obviously it will be damaging to the liver. Now let's jump into the last part of that question. When you ask about insulin, insulin is actually a hormone, and it's produced by the pancreatic cells. Now, there aren't specifically foods that will promote the presence or the development of insulin, but there are foods that will hinder the glucose metabolism. And we know this, oversaturated foods, oversugary foods, all of that will hinder your glucose metabolism. How do we keep our insulin or pancreatic cells well functioning? By not stem with too much sugar. And as I tell all my patients, especially my diabetic patients, I tell them, you're sweet enough already. We don't need all of that sugar. So I'll say the same thing to you, caller. Hope that answers the question.
All right, Doc. And today we happen to be celebrating World Senior Citizens Day. So we say hi going out to all of our senior citizens out there. All right?
Yes.
Let's take
I know on this particular program, we have a host of senior citizens tuned in anytime I go to the mall, to different family gatherings, to different events, I have a host of senior citizens coming up to me, sharing how much the advice has helped them. Some even say they sit with a pen and paper, taking down some of the information to share to their families. To all of our loyal fans, I thank you. I appreciate you. And I want you to know you're each an ambassador of help.
Nice, man. Beautiful. 627-3223, 625-2257. And of course, your WhatsApp messages, 306-1065. Let's go to the WhatsApp. I think a word is missing here. Good day, doctor. How do I know if I have cholesterol? Should that be high cholesterol or just put half cholesterol?
That's okay. We understand what they're asking. So if you have cholesterol, if you have high cholesterol in particular, because we all kind of need a little bit of cholesterol throughout our bodies just to ensure the proper cell metabolism. So how do you know if you have a high cholesterol? A simple blood test. That blood test, we want to ensure you are fasting. And what do we need by a fasting blood test? The night before, from say midnight, you're not going to have anything to drink or to eat. You can still have water, but you're not going to have anything to now directly affect the value of the blood investigation you're going to do the following day. So you need to do a fasting cholesterol value and then do the breakdown. It'll give you the triglyceride component, the LDL, the HDL, which are your good cholesterols, the VLDL, and then, of course, the overarching total cholesterol. But here's what. You can know if you have high cholesterol without even doing a blood sugar, a blood cholesterol test. There can be cholesterol deposits around the eye. Yes, it's called a xanthan. It is a yellow deposition of cholesterol, and it's just under the skin or within the conjunctiva itself. You may also see changes in the skin. You may even feel your system feeling a little sluggish, feeling more fatigue. It may be those cholesterol deposits along the cardiovascular pathway that's now causing your blood pressure to be increased. So one may just have a high blood pressure, and that may mean the cholesterol values are high. So there's several ways to know if your cholesterol values are high, but most importantly, let's make sure we do that blood test.
All right, let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchtime, doctor.
Hello, good day. I'm just calling to find out how long you could take omega-8-3 and 369, please.
So great questions. These are micronutrients that do bring benefits to the body, specifically the omega-3 fatty acid. And I want to just bring that one forward. You can get it in your fish oil micronutrients. You can get it in these fish oil supplements. I think I'm back on.
Yes,
all hearing clearly?
Yes, clearly, yeah.
Fantastic. It's always a benefit to be in studio. Being virtual does have its communication challenges, but I try to balance seeing my patients and, of course, attending to all of our listeners. So let me just jump back straight into that question. The person asked about the omega-3 and how often. So again, same thing. Like we talked about with the turmeric and the aspirin, let it be prescribed or recommended by your healthcare professional, because each individual has different needs or different health deficits. So one who has, say, a previous history of a stroke or a heart attack, I certainly will need or have them utilize the benefits of the omega-3, omega-369s, in fact. But one who may be younger and not at risk of, then we'll balance the intake of it. Again, continue to be guided by your healthcare professional.
All right, let's take a call here. Hello, good afternoon, welcome.
Hello. Hi, Doc. I am.
Good afternoon, you're on live on air.
Hello. I am 90 years of age. I am not diabetic. What I have is a left eye watery and losing out some yellow stuff. I tried several eye drops with no avail. I visited a specialist recently and he gave me some eye drops and he told me it's an infection and will be cleared up in 2 weeks' time. Doc, I'm using the same prescription for 6 weeks now and nothing doing. Am I to believe that is the vaccine from the COVID that's causing it? I'll listen off there.
So thank you so much for calling in. I'm so sorry you're enduring such a troublesome time. Now, let me just clear that misconception. I don't believe this is not one of the side effects that we saw with any of our patients from the vaccine. So I do believe it is the vaccine causing that. There are many times that the body may respond to medications and it may then not respond to medications based on uptake, based on other medical challenges, or even based on the frequency of the medication. So it may be, it may need to switch out. And if you're not seeing any changes at all, having used this for 6 weeks, here what I would suggest. One, we may need to return to that same particular individual healthcare professional that would have prescribed it, or you get a second opinion. Either which way, a follow-up appointment is always warranted, because that way we get to assess, is this working, is this not working? I won't be able to give you that assessment over the radio because I'm not visualizing, I'm not actually seeing or doing a full history or examination. All of my patients would know. Sometimes I sit them down for a good 20 minutes in doing a full history and a complete thorough examination, whereas the radio conversation is just to give you that guidance on what that next step is. But I'm really sorry that you're experiencing this amount of distress 6 weeks after. Let me encourage you to return to whichever doctor or healthcare professional would have prescribed it, or just get a second opinion. I'm certain they will switch out the medication. They may even go one step further. That's how most medications go. We start at level one or step one. If that doesn't work, then we go straight to step two or three. We don't jump straight to the step three because those stronger medications also come with stronger side effects. So we taper, we gauge based on the entire circumstance of the patient. Hope that answers your question.
All right, you listen to The Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Vibe City 105, Sangi 106.1, and Sky 99.5. Hello, good afternoon.
Doc, me again. Sorry to call back. But insulin, I didn't hear it finish. It's the key to longevity. And Doc, we would really like to know, actually, because then again, like you mentioned, if there's any food or fruit to build your insulin, or so it shouldn't run, or because insulin is stuck by pancreas, and we need to have a good supply. Failing to get insulin or having enough insulin could become diabetic. So, Doc, what is the best food or fruit to build insulin? Thanks again, darling.
So, no problem. I think what you're looking at is what foods would support something called insulin sensitivity. So I did actually mention it. I did stay away from what things to avoid. But here's what things can certainly help. But let me first, even before we talk about those fruits and vegetables, let me really explain what is insulin. I mentioned it just now. Insulin is that hormone that helps the body absorb glucose and keeps that glucose metabolism A-OK. It's actually, as we say, produced by the pancreatic cell. And when there is something called insulin resistance, as in the cells cannot, the entire body that's made up of different cells cannot use that insulin effectively, it can then cause insulin resistance, leading us to pre-diabetes and then further next step, type 2 diabetes. When there's too much sugar swirling around the body, it can damage the muscles, the limbs, the lower limbs, the feet, the eyes, the kidneys, the liver, everything. So what fruits and vegetables in particular will help support that insulin or glucose metabolism? Any and all high fiber foods, your lentils, your nuts and seeds, beans, chana, fruits, your citrus fruits in particular, lemons, oranges, your green leafy vegetables, broccoli, sweet peppers, tomatoes even. So we call those non-starchy vegetables. Now notice, those are the same fruits and vegetables that we will tell you to have on your healthy plate or to utilize and prevent becoming diabetic. So those are some of the fruits and vegetables that will help support your insulin sensitivity. Hope that answers your question.
All right, folks, of course, remember we're sponsored by Superfarm. Find more savings in-store at Superfarm, your prescription of trust. 627-3223, 625-2257. Let's deal with some. Oh, let's take this call, and then we deal with some WhatsApp messages. Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. Prophet, I just wanted to find out, taking a blood pressure, when you take a blood pressure in the morning, how long after you should check it again a second time? What happens?
Great.
The reason I'm asking is because I checked mine this morning, and it was like 136 over 81. And I rested like maybe 2 to 3 minutes and waited and then checked it again. And it changed from 136 to 131, but the 5 that moved from the 36 went to the 81, so the 81 went to 80. So I was just kind of curious because I checked it in too short a space of time.
Yes, definitely. Very, very good question, caller. Here's why. Because the procedure we take to take the blood pressure can actually lead to accurate readings or inaccurate readings. So even before you take the blood pressure, I would suggest we sit comfortably at least 5 minutes. And that 5 minutes is just to help the body equilibrate. Some people, just as they reach the doctor's office, they just rushing, reach the office, and they go straight from visitor's room to the doctor's room, and right away they take the blood pressure, and the blood pressure is elevated. Obviously, because blood pressure is very much representative and affected by the level of cortisol, adrenaline circulating in the body. Similarly, that time gap between your first reading and your second reading, while that 136 on 81 is elevated, I won't be as overly concerned. But the minute that diastolic, the systolic, the bottom value, the diastolic goes over 85, I am very much concerned. So I would suggest at least a 5 to 10 minute period, at least 5 minutes. If you can give yourself 10 minutes, even better. WHO recommends 5 minutes sitting comfortably at your position, allowing your hand to be perpendicular to the body, resting on a tabletop, and of course, the pressure cuff. The blood pressure cuff must be properly corner or the crease of the elbow. All of those things, measures, lead to an accurate reading. So in between your first reading and your second reading, at least 5 minutes. That doesn't mean within the 5 minutes you're going to get up, drink a cup of coffee, pace up and down, and then go back and take the blood pressure. And I'm laughing because I've seen patients, I've seen my own mother do this. And sometimes I sit and I watch, and all those who are listening in know I often talk about this very concerning patient of mine, my mom, who had a heart attack and also is on medications. Thankfully, she's very much alive and very consistent with her medications. But like all typical patients, may not take the medications at time. Her blood pressures may go up. News may affect her blood pressure. And I've seen her pace in between taking the reading, which then led to a subsequently higher reading. So great question. I hope all who are listening understand that we as doctors are very much human. We see all this happening all the time. And the advice we are giving you is based not only on our clinical knowledge, but being logical and being commonsensical as well. So give yourself a solid 5 minutes in between and you will see that change in the blood pressure reading. If, however, the second reading is still elevated, I certainly hope you're taking those next steps to bring that down. Either which way, the 136 on 81, the 1 to the 1 on 86 is considered elevated. I hope you are avoiding salt or at least reducing your salt. You are probably on some sort of cardiovascular stability, some sort of medications, and please check your cholesterol. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's do with some WhatsApp messages. Good afternoon. I'm a 43-year-old female currently diagnosed with bronchitis, wheezing. I visited my doctor and was treated and prescribed antibiotics and other meds together with nebulizing. I've seen improvements, but I'm still coughing in a lot, which leads to a loss of bladder control. This has respiratory issue is occurring very often, approximately every 4 to 6 months. Can you advise what I need to do to improve my respiratory issue?
So I'm glad the person messaged in. We have been seeing a lot of patients in the ER with a constant chronic cough. One, I'm not too sure if this patient has COVID. We've seen a chronic cough from patients who had COVID-19 and didn't subsequently heal, or the lungs had some sort of scarring. So one, I would want you to get a proper x-ray first and foremost. You did talk about having been on a couple of medications. The next thing I'd want you to be assessed on is a pulmonary function test. And what does that mean? Especially as you're having this chronic cough, we'll ask you to blow into a specific piece of instrument, and then that will allow us to know what is your lung reserves, your pulmonary functional capacity. That will give us a good idea if there's any scarring or if there's any sort of defects that post-COVID or even any, be it asthma or any other condition, that would have affected your lungs. Two, the next very important thing is we want to ensure it's not some sort of allergic component. A post-nasal drip or any sort of ENT, ear, nose, throat pathology, can also lead to a chronic cough. Sometimes it may even need to be adjusting the circumstances of our sleep and where we sleep in the night, because in the morning we wake up with this dry hacking cough. And that's because of, if it's the Sahara dust in the air or some sort of allergic condition. So there are a couple things well that can lead to this chronic cough. I'm glad you've already seek some treatment. Take it one step further. Let them know the follow-up. Let them know you're still having these concerns. Probably we need to do a few more investigations, like an x-ray and that pulmonary function test. Hope that answers your question.
All right, Doug, what causes snoring and how do you fix it?
Excellent question. I think probably about half of our population suffer with sleep concerns. Snoring is the presentation of when one has something called obstructive sleep apnea. And it is also very much a sign and a symptom that we see if there's any sort of, again, ENT, ear, nose, throat pathology. The adenoids could be enlarged. The tonsils could be enlarged. Children can present with snoring, and that's because of a tonsillar hypertrophy. And this is why once one is snoring, it also affects the oxygen levels throughout the day. And they may be drowsy. They may be suffering with what people call dropsy, where they're feeling sleepy all through the day. What is necessary? There is indeed these obstructive sleep apnea, OSA, testing. Very similar to what I just mentioned, where they do pulmonary function testing, but specifically related into identifying if there's any problem with the passageway where the oxygen and your air flows through. Now, let me just kind of give everyone what happens in sleep in particular. So during sleep, if you were to think about the anatomy of the face and, again, the ear, nose and throat area, there is that connection between the nasopharynx, that's the nasal passageway, and the oropharynx, the mouth. And just between there is indeed small muscles, and they move as the air filters in. But as the air filters in and the person inhales, that may make the snoring noise if there's any, if the area, that surrounding area, is indeed inflamed, if there's any sort of problem with the passageway, and that's what causes snoring. Is it bad? It's usually snoring, most times, tend to be usually harmless, but in some cases, just as I mentioned, where there could be tonsillar hypertrophy, adenoid hypertrophy, or obstructive sleep apnea, it is worth getting checked out. Hope that answers the question.
Hi, Doc. I'm 38 years old, have gout about 6 years now. My range is 9.0. I did a blood test 3 months ago and was put on 300 milligrams of allopurinol, right, for 3 months. Can you talk more about gout?
Yes, definitely. Now, gout is one of those things that we really only become prescribed, diagnosed, when there's that swelling of the toes or swelling of the fingers. But it more so in terms of when there's swelling of the big toe. And one may wonder, well, how does that, how is it that the foods that I'm eating is now affecting the toe? And that's because of a very unfortunate chemical that causes gout called purine. So some foods, and that is alcohol, meats, red meats in particular, even things like high fructose corn syrup or overly sugary drinks, all of these things, when it's processed and broken down, there's a high degree of purine circulating. So we need to, one, first and foremost, yes, continue with the allopurinol, because just like I said, the high purines, that allopurinol help reduce the purines within the system. But we also need to avoid some of those foods. Alcohol is one of your highly causative agents. The amount of persons that we see developing gout because, unfortunately, they either have an abuse of alcohol, overuse of alcohol, or excessive use of alcohol. So let's try to cut down on that. Let's try to switch out to that general healthy diet. If you're having milk, you want to stay to the low fat or the non-dairy. If you're having carbohydrate foods, you want to stay to, so if it's, say, potatoes, stay to the sweet potatoes, cassava, yam, edos, not so much your regular potatoes or pasta or bread, because all of that will lead to development of gout. If you're having meats, you want to have the lean meats, your white meats like turkey, if you're having chicken, use the breast instead, versus the red meats like steak. You want to encourage more fish versus even eggs. So again, it's very much anyone with gout should have a dietitian consult, because there's a specific dietitian recommendations for persons with gout. Hope that answers your question.
All right, Doctor. 12:39 on time. Remember, we're sponsored by Superfarm, and you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor. All right, good afternoon, Doc. I have listened to your explanation on taking medication. I am on medication for high blood pressure for years, but will I have problems with my kidneys later? I am 64 years of age.
Excellent question. So no, you shouldn't have problems with your kidneys, simply because I'm certain anyone who's on high blood pressure medication, they always do something called an RFTs, the kidney function test. Now keep in mind, high blood pressure can directly damage your kidneys. So again, we're looking at the benefits versus the risk. We certainly, once we take the medications within the recommended dosages, and of course, as guided by your healthcare professional, then there shouldn't be those side effects. That was just an example specifically with aspirin. So if you are on aspirin, switch out to the enteric-coated versions. Again, high blood pressures can directly affect the kidneys. So we want to make sure we minimize that blood pressure, so we minimize the complications to all of our organs. Hope that answers your question.
All right, folks, we're just sorting out some messages here. We do have a lot. Doctor, I know smoking is bad, but having incense smoking and inhaling it, is it okay? Thank you.
So that is just as bad. It's called secondhand smoking. And that secondhand smoke can also still have the nicotine components. It can still have the carcinogenic components. In fact, there's even something called third-hand smoking. I wonder if all of our listeners know anything about third-hand smoking. Here's what that is. That's not where you are directly inhaling the smoke, but that's where the particles of the smoke remain, say, on the curtains, remain on the couch fibers, remain on the linens of the bed. And say if there's a younger one, a baby, a pregnant person, an elderly person, and they happen to inhale these particles, then they can also have very similar effects of smoking, even to the point of developing a lung cancer. And mind you, they're absolutely not smoking, but the smoke is then binds within these materials and leaves these harmful, causes these harmful effects on the system. So to answer your question, yes, the secondhand smoke can directly still impact negatively. Hope that answers.
All right. Hi, Doc. I've been having trouble with my period, meaning that I have been bleeding sometimes and the whole month, even as I'm on birth control pill. Currently, I'm still bleeding. The doctor sent me to do an ultrasound and it's normal. Can you please tell me what can be causing this problem?
So it sounds very complex. One, I'm glad you went ahead and did the ultrasound. Anytime one is bleeding outside of the usual menstrual cycle, we'd want to ensure we rule out anatomical pathologies like a fibroid, endometriosis that may not be picked up on the end and on the ultrasound. You may need to do other investigations like something called an HSG, the hysterosalpingogram. It may be hormonal in nature as well that causes these intermenstrual bleeds. Now, what I would need to do, or what you can do, is one, have what they call a menstrual calendar, where you're actually plotting it down. And most of these phones now, there's an app where you can plot your the amount of days it comes, how heavy it comes, what days in between the cycle it comes, and of course, what additional symptoms you're experiencing. When you present to your gynecologist or your healthcare professional, let them know these things. We may need to put on these hormonal medications to just help regulate and reduce this excessive bleeding. Keep in mind, if you're losing blood outside of the menstrual cycle, then you are at risk of anemia. And this is where we would need you to top up with your hematinics, or just by way of diet, your green leafy vegetables, all of those things we mentioned that will help support the hemoglobin and reduce the risk of anemia. So I hope that answers your question. This is something that could be quite debilitating. So please move it one step further and get it sorted out.
All right, folks, we could take back some calls at 627-3223, 625-2257. We get some WhatsApp messages in the meantime. Good day, doctor. Can I do a GFR blood test to check the kidney twice a year?
Most definite FR, your glomerular filtration rate. Again, it must be prescribed by your healthcare professional. You may not need to do it twice a year, once there's no pathology, is sufficient enough, but do it in conjunction with the renal function test where we'd identify the creatinine value. Hope that answers your question.
All right, yeah, folks. Remember, we're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5, Vibe City 105 FM, and Freedom 106.5 right here, Sangeet 106.1. Of course, we're being sponsored with the kind compliments of Super Farm, right? 627-3223, 625-2257. Good afternoon, Doctor. I now checked my blood pressure reading. It's 122 over 77, 863. Years of old female, not on any medication.
Well, I would love to know, my dear, what you are doing, because...
Oh, God. All right, so we seem to be out again. All right, we take a break. and we will reconnect with the doctor.
Get up to 50% off in Super Saver specials at Super Farm. Stock up on the major brands you use while stocks last. Visit our social media for details and hurry in for the products you need at any of our 9 locations nationwide. Open earlier and later for your safe shopping convenience. Up to 50% in super savings await you at Super Farm, your prescription of trust.
Six Introducing more. The Inside Edge, a brand new cricket show about to swing your way.
It's gone!
Guardian Media Limited, Jassim Mareek, and former TNT cricketer Andre Lawrence turn their arms over at some of the biggest names in the sport and take on the biggest topics of the day.
With the win for six.
Inside Edge airs
every Monday night from 8:30 p.m.
on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Catch the Inside Edge.
Stumped. Wicket.
All right, let's reconnect with the doctor. You're back inside. Yeah, Doc, hello?
Yes, I'm right. Certainly right here.
Okay.
That's okay. Tomorrow we'll be in studio to avoid all of these little tech hindrances.
All right, let's take the calls. Hello, good afternoon. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, good afternoon. You're on the air?
Yeah. This is the doctor.
Yes, it is.
Okay. I would like to know what's the difference in drinking evaporated milk. It might be a stupid question, but I'm interested in it. Evaporated milk and ordinary low-fat milk.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
There is no question that's an unsmart question, or as you said, stupid question. There's no question like that. Here's why we need person to know exactly what is evaporated milk. Now, evaporated milk tends to be much higher in sugar concentration than the low-fat milk. Here's what I would suggest and I would recommend just about anyone to do. Just turn to the back and look at the nutritious facts. You would see that the saturated fat is higher in your evaporated milk. Your total amount of sugars per daily allowance is considerably higher in your evaporated milk. In fact, sometimes I wonder, why is it I see evaporated milk at most of these events and areas for where there's a coffee table when it should be the low-fat milk? So if you are indeed diabetic, then try to switch to the low-fat milk. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's take another call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome.
A very good afternoon to you, Doctor. Doctor, what are the symptoms of iodine deficiency? Thank you.
So when we have patients with iodine deficiency, that's more, they present with signs and symptoms of the thyroid organ. So there's a thyroid gland just located in the neck. And one may, unfortunately, if the thyroid gland is not functioning, then that's where they present with these symptoms of iodine deficiency. One may not just present with symptoms of iodine deficiency, just like that. It's not a nutrient that we need to go and now make sure we have in our foods and eats. You do actually get a fair amount of iodine in the same foods I just mentioned early on, which is your dairy, your seafoods, your green leafy vegetables. So you do get a fair amount of iodine in those specific foods, but really we see that iodine deficiency in more our thyroid related disorders. Hope that answers the question.
Well, let's get another call. 10 minutes away from 1 o'clock. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon, Skipper. How are you going?
All right, man.
All right. Good afternoon, Dr. Sophia. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, by the grace of God.
Very good. Very good. I listened to the program, and as you were saying, everything is in moderation in terms of what you eat and drink and stuff like that, in terms of the turmeric and ginger and stuff. But I was just wondering, like somebody who has type 2 diabetes, for instance, right? They are metformin, and you're taking metformin twice a day. Right? No, as we say, too much of one thing might be good enough for you, as the case is. But somebody with with type 2 diabetes and taking this sort of medication over a period of time, this metformin, can that affect, let's say, for instance, the kidneys or maybe liver and other parts of the system? That's a little bit curious to know. Thanks.
Excellent question. So every single medication has these side effects. We know that. But what we do know is that because of the amount that's prescribed, it would not incur damage. The benefit far outweighs the damage because it has gone through enough levels of testing, approvals, stages of research, different protocols in place. So the amount that's prescribed will not, and that's why you will have, say, metformin, at when we prescribe, we know the amount that we cannot go above in terms of a per daily dose or even per dose. So we know, okay, we can't go over, say, 750 milligrams per day, or we may need to split it up in two or three amounts, etc. And we're just using one tablet in particular. But it's more important that we keep using the medications to bring down or to manage the glucose metabolism throughout the body than to have the harmful effects of sugar throughout the body. So that's why, right here on this program, we often give you additional methods, the lifestyle methods that you can actually navigate and utilize. Once you're consistent, you can actually wean off your metformin or wean down the amount of metformin. We've had a number of patients, once they've engaged in a proper exercise routine, they've managed to lose a couple pounds, because yes, increased weight also means increased risk of diabetes, because you're increasing the BMI. And you want to ensure your diet is very, very well controlled. So yes, all medications, everything in excess will have side effects. But once it's utilized within the prescribed amount, it won't. And of course, we look at the benefits versus the risks. So I hope that answers your question.
All right. Hello. Good afternoon. Welcome. Hello. Caller. All right. Lunchtime, doctor. We take two more calls. 627-3223, 625-2257. Let's try again. Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, doc.
Yeah. Speak up a little bit, miss. We could hardly hear you.
And the host. Good afternoon. Are you hearing me better now? Hello.
Yeah, we're hearing you a little better. Go
yes,
ahead.
We certainly hear you.
About diet, roti, whole wheat bread, rice, macaroni, pasta, which is better to use?
So thank you so much. Now, if one is diabetic, I would say to ease off all of it, because all of them have a high glycemic index. What does that mean? It's a high carbohydrate amount. If you really have to, I would suggest switch out. So you can use the cassava flour instead. It has a lower glycemic index. You can use the whole wheat flour instead. Some people use the corn flour that has a higher fiber. Again, we want to switch away, stay away from having foods with high carbohydrates like roti, pasta, rice, morning, noon, and night. That unfortunately increases our glycemic load. In fact, just this morning, I was having a conversation with someone. They were using the lettuce as their slices of bread. They said they're no longer having bread in the morning. They're having their hamburger. As always, they're putting the little taste of cheese, small amounts as always. But instead of the bread, they're now using just the lettuce as their slices of bread. Why do we try to cut down? Because each one of those things that you mentioned has a very high, and when I say very high, it increases the glucose amount or the glucose insufficiency if one is diabetic. So that's why to all of our diabetic patients, we tell them cut down on the sugars, cut down on the pasta, cut down on the rice, cut down on the starches, roti in particular. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's go to our WhatsApps here. Or let's take a call first and then we go to the WhatsApp. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello and good afternoon. Continue doing a good job, Doc. Doc, I would like you to raise the awareness of suicidal hate and depression with young kids in relationships, falling in love the first time and all these things, heartbroken. And you're the best person to address it because it's really not highlighted enough. And I would like you to think about it and address it. Have a good day. Thanks again.
Yo, caller, thank you so much for bringing that up. That, as you said that, I felt, you know, that pit in my heart because my heart breaks every single time we unfortunately hear about a family losing a loved one, especially a young one, to suicide. And yes, it's something that I believe we definitely will continue to address. We did, and we have talked about it right here on the program. We've had specific conversations in our Health Plus on the increasing numbers of young adolescents unfortunately falling to suicide. And we also need to shift the stigma away from suicide. It is a condition just like diabetes, which is one of the pancreas. This suicide depression is a condition where there are neurochemicals off balance within the mind, within the brain. So as we wrap up this program, we're coming to the end. We only have about 3 minutes, but we certainly will designate an entire program to looking at the anxieties, depression, and suicide, ways we can prevent it, ways we can identify with our parents when our children are struggling, ways when we can identify even the adults are struggling. Sometimes one may see a person becoming more aggressive or a person retreating. All of that, those changes in behavior, can be indicative of some sort of underlying trauma, and one can be silently suffering. So to all those out there who unfortunately may experience anxiety, I want to let you know you are not alone. The amount of patients that share to me their anxieties, the amount of persons, parents, CEOs, you call the level, there's no level that distinguishes. Every certain level category experiences these heartbreaks, anxieties in particular, that unfortunately can lead to depression or suicide. But I want you to know you're not alone. There's always, always hope. Reach out and talk to someone. It can be a loved one, it can be a neighbor, it can be a priest, it can be your medical professional. Just reach out and talk. Sometimes we can place you on medication, sometimes we can start cognitive behavioral therapy. Sometimes you just engage in meditation, but there are many ways out of that dark place. Hope that answers the question.
All right, Doc. 1 minute. We have a quick one here. I'm on heart medication. Can I take Daflon 500 milligrams? I am a 76-year-old female.
So most definitely. I don't know the other medications you are on. Daflon is one of those that we prescribe in conjunction with the cardiovascular medications. But again, let your healthcare professional make that decision because I'm not seeing the other medications you're on. Hope that answers the question.
All right, Doc, and that'll be it for today. Let's get into what's in our Help Plus for tomorrow. We forgot that.
Yeah, that. Look how quickly the 1 hour flies by. Yeah. So all of our listeners, join me on CNC3 Morning Brew just about 7:30, 7:40 in the morning on CNC3 Morning Brew. You can also join me right here back lunchtime, Doctor, 12 to 1 across. And in our Health Plus, we're specifically talking about the eye care of our children. Those that are gaming, what is the screen time, what are the healthy habits, who needs to be checked before they go back out to school. Tune in tomorrow, CNC3, and join us right here back on Your Lunchtime Doctor. I'm so happy to always be here with you. My heartfelt gratitude to all of our listeners, to our sponsor, Superfarm in particular, that is making sure this program comes to you. Signing off for today, Dr. Safiya Mohammed.
All right, thank you there very much, folks. And of course, you'll be listening to The Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5. Sangit 106.1 and Vibe City 105 FM. Join us tomorrow at 12 noon. And many thanks, of course, going out to Superfarm, our sponsor. And do enjoy the rest of your day.